Well, I work mostly with projected light, and it comes from a digital source as opposed to just a regular light bulb. And the imagery being projected is extremely minimal abstract animation technically. So it's a simple shape like a line or a geometric shape, just moving very, very slowly across an object, a space. But the point is to look at the quality of the light and how it reveals material qualities of the space or the object in a reciprocal way so that we see things we weren't seeing before.
You know, I was looking at your website and some other sites out there that feature your work online to get an idea, and it's quite haunting and mesmerizing. You watch this, usually just a sliver of light, like you said, and it makes you look at whatever it is you're looking at in a different way, which I guess is the whole point. As your perspective changes, as your vantage point might change, or as the light moves, what you see is quite different moment to moment. Talk about perception theory. You talk about that on your website. Explain what that is.
The main writer that I've come across with it is a philosopher named Maurice Merleau-Ponty, who is obviously French, in the early mid-1900s. And basically what he talks about is our vision faculties are very much controlled by how our brain filters information. So what our senses, well, it's not just vision, but I primarily deal with vision, what our senses pick up, and it's really, you know, a evolutionary survival technique that if we had to deal with every piece of, every sound we heard, everything our skin touched, everything we smelled, if we had to pay attention to all of those things all the time, we'd kind of go crazy. So our brain filters it out based on efficiency. So there are lots of things that we see that our eye picks up on, but we don't actually see in our vision because our brain filters it out. So that's what I'm interested in with my work is how do we get people to see what they're already, their eyes are already picking up, but they're not registering.
That blend of eye and mind in what we perceive.
Absolutely.
The way I think about it is you can have 100 people looking at the same thing, and every one of them is probably going to come away and describe it a little differently.
Exactly. And then a maybe colloquial way of saying it, there are times when people will be like, oh, you point something out, and then they say, oh, I can't unsee that now.
Yeah.
Things that you never would have seen if someone didn't point it out, and then you're like, I can't not see that.
Kind of like, you know, if you're looking for a red car, or you're thinking about one, all of a sudden you're going to see red cars everywhere. Is that the same idea? Yeah.
Yes, very much so.
Okay. And you also allude to the influence of late stage capitalism, of neoliberalism on your artwork. Talk about how that influences what you do.
Well, I see it as being related to the perception theory idea in that we live in a not to get too grand, but we live in a world where there are Robert Irwin, the artist, refers to it as like culturally agreed upon hierarchical systems of value. So like there are these things that we all agree are important, you know, and like we live in the real world and these things have to get done. But a lot of that comes from this like economic and governing structure. And we don't acknowledge that it's actually a system. We just think it's how life is. And it's actually a really, it pulls away from what actually is the real world. You know, I mean, how can we, the greatest example is just, you know, our environmental situation. How can we call this like economic system that we live in the real world when it completely ignores the most basic element of our survival as a race, which is our ecology?
Yeah, it's the lens that has kind of been forced over our eyes on most everything that we see. And by see, I mean with all our senses, I suppose.
Exactly. Like the way we conceive of the world and ourselves within it. I think my work is very subtle, but what I hope is that if we can attune people's perception to see what they weren't seeing before, that maybe over time that skill gets translated to these larger systems.
I was fascinated when I read on your site something about your question of how does assumed knowledge prevent real knowledge? Mm-hmm. And that it can be a kind of a blinding lens that's put on our eye when we look at something.
It absolutely is. I mean, you know, my older brother is an artist, and mm-hmm. He's 9 years older than me, so when I was growing up, I, like, idolized him. And I remember doing this drawing at my kitchen table of, like, our house, and I made all the bricks red. And he came in and told me, you know, there's other colors in there. They're not all just red. The shadows aren't gray. They're mostly blue and maybe some green and purples. And and the highlights have, like, there's yellows on the other side and definitely some orange. And it kind of, I mean, obviously it made an impact. I remember it all these years later. But just the idea that, like, white isn't white. A white wall actually has a whole rainbow of colors across it most
right.
of the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just this. But I'm told in school that's white, that's red, that's this, and not that that's wrong. It's a great way, you know. We have
super
to teach
simplified.
People how to navigate. We have to teach people how to navigate the world, but then in some sense, you have to unlearn that so that you can actually see what's in front of you.
Yeah, I've always thought, and I grew up in an artistic family. My dad's a painter, and I've always thought that, you know, you think you've seen a face 1,000 times, a million times. But then when you start to draw that face, it somehow focuses you on details that you realize you've never really seen before. So I think even if you're not a talented artist, you should try to draw somebody's face if you really want to see them.
Yes, absolutely.
How do you start on one of your projects, your process a little bit? The usual materials, I understand, are wood or fabric and, of course, light, probably the main player in your projects. Talk about your process. How do you set something up?
Sometimes I find a scrap of wood. I have a friend who's a furniture maker, mm-hmm. and I'll go hang out at his shop, and he has these really interesting offcuts. And I'll just see one that I'm like, oh, that's really cool. So then I want to shine a light on it to see what's there that I'm not already seeing.
Mm.
The last piece I made, the one I'm currently working on, they're kind of dealing with that a single scrap. They're centered around a single, like, offcut of wood. And I've been working with that for about 6 months. So there's a lot of interest in it for me. On the other hand, I'm helping put on a fundraising gala for a small theater company in Chicago right now. And we're doing a projection room. So what we've decided there is that I'm hanging fabric in a way that relates to the shape of the light coming out of the projector in that small room. And I'm going to do a new animation based on the way the forms created by the fabric hanging in relationship to the room. It can be a single object that I'm looking at, or it can be and how does it change if I add light to it and move it slowly? How does it change? Or, you know, what's the space I'm dealing with? What kind of volume is here? And how does my perception of it change through adding some, adding light and movement?
There must be challenges, though, when you show your work that you can be limited, I imagine, by the space that you're given, no?
Oh, absolutely. The space is incredibly important because if I don't have, I mean, the number one priority is I need to have a very high degree of control over the light. People who are making objects or, you know, artists who are making objects or, you know, paintings, images, things like that often want really good, high quality light. And I want the opposite. Like, give me a dark room, get all that stuff out of here. And that can be, especially if it's in a situation with other artists, which I'm often shown with other people, then it's very difficult to find that middle ground.
Yeah, if somebody else is showing, you have to give them a flashlight to see their paintings or...
mm-hmm. For some reason, they don't love. I don't know.
You recently, I understand, had a show in South Korea?
Oh, yeah, I was part of a group show in South Korea, yeah, at the CICA Museum.
How did that go? What did you show?
I showed a video that I made, which is also an abstract animation, but it's a much more complex imagery. It works well just being projected on the wall as a screen. And when you start to add other forms or fabric to the projection to interact with it, it actually takes away from it a little bit.
Ah.
So I showed that because it worked well being that I couldn't travel there and actually set up an installation. Or, I mean, I could, I guess, but...
Yeah. So you had to have somebody else do it?
Yeah. So that was something that is easier to give someone else to set up and not worry about whether it's going to come across the way it should or not.
So you're going to be coming to Vicksburg here near Kalamazoo soon. So tell us about that. How did that happen? And what are you planning to work on there?
Well, I submitted through the Prairie Ronde. Mm-hmm. It's the Prairie Ronde Artist Residency, and I submitted through their open call in November. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, received a call and interviewed and ended up being selected, which was really exciting.
Yeah.
And I want to just get into the paper mill and shine a light on stuff, play and see what happens. I'm really very excited to have such an interesting industrial space with so much lived history to it and so much meaning in terms of its importance to the town and how the community developed around it. I'm really interested to get in there and to talk to people too and understand what, just the way I've been working in my studio, I'm looking really just at the objects. I'm not taking the studio itself into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm using it more as a non-place. And what I would like to do in Vicksburg is quite the opposite, is really look at place and submerge myself in that place, the physicality of it and the history of it. And that will absolutely impact the way I look at things, and therefore it will be reflected in the work. Not sure exactly how, but it will be. So I'm very excited to see how that, the way I've been looking at objects and how that gets.
Have you seen that space yet, or this when you come
out? I have
out?
Not.
Oh,
no.
This will be exciting.
I'm seeing photos. I'm very excited.
I imagine you first days there sitting in the middle of this huge, empty, old paper mill and just watching the light move across that space. Am I imagining right? Is that how it begins?
It's likely that I'll definitely just spend time there sitting and walking around to start with. Yeah, absolutely.
I enjoy taking photos, and I've learned that where I live, I call it the golden hour, and yet actually it's the golden minute. It passes so quickly.
Really?
So in the middle of the day, usually things are just kind of washed out, but you hit that right time of day, and there's just like a magic that happens. And I imagine that the paper mill will come alive for you like that. So is there a gallery show at the end of this, or...
There is, yes. We'll be doing a reception, and I don't know what will be shown yet, but I'm very excited to share it with everyone.
That's kind of wonderful that you don't have any idea at this point. You're going to have to let that paper mill speak to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and guide you on what it wants you to see. So that's that's exciting.
Another word for work like mine is that it's feminological, and in the discourse about this type of work, including minimalist sculpture and light and space movement, something that I've become really interested in is the argument for including empirical discovery in that conversation rather than art theory as it exists now, it being that language usually fails to really communicate what happens in those situations. We don't really have words for what our mind is dealing with in those situations yet.
Hmm. What did you study in Chicago? What type of art forms, or did you take all kinds of art forms? And how did this capture your attention over other mediums?
Well, my background is painting and drawing. I used to do portraiture, really photorealistic, as well as abstract, but I used to do really realistic rendering. And I started getting into digital imagery, taking a photo and then putting it through an early version of iPhoto actually in 2007 and just adjusting until it became almost pixelated and very flattened and hyper-colorized. And then in undergrad, I just always worked with multiple versions of the same image. And when you lay those out, there starts to be a movement to it. It feels very, so the transition into working with multiples, working with time then kind of became this natural progression. And then in grad school, I wanted to do a film video program because I'm working with moving image. And I had never studied it. I studied more a traditional approach. I kind of found my way, but I kept reducing the imagery because people were asking me what it meant. You know, I have this video I took of mountains as I was driving through them, and I layer over this water imagery to give it texture and color. And people kept asking me, like, what the mountains mean. And the mountains are the mountains. They, like, have their own meaning already. I'm not adding symbolism. I'm not adding anything to it. Mm-hmm. So that distraction became really frustrating. So I kept reducing the imagery down to where it was doing. What I realized is that the optics of it, what was happening perceptually, was what was interesting to me in those videos. So I just kept reducing the imagery until there wasn't really any distraction left.
The importance of play for an artist, I think. It sounds to me like you're playing with something to discover where it's going to go.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Develop the visual vocabulary, and I read a lot, you know, try to make those associations in my mind. And then when I'm in the studio, you kind of just let go and see what happens because I've already done the work to put some pathways in my brain already.
And there's got to be an element of surprise for you when you're working, I would imagine.
There's a lot of discovery. It's really exciting and fun. It can be very frustrating working with, you know, any kind of computer-driven, especially animation. Sometimes it's very, very tedious. I want to make something happen in a certain way, and I can't quite get it there, and it takes a lot of work. But there's a lot of discovery, too.
You probably can't force it too much, no?
No, I mean, no, I was talking with my brother the other day that, you know, a challenge of being someone who's, you know, working full time and being an adult human who has to feed themselves and clothe themselves.
Darn it.
I know, right? And spend time with other humans. But spending enough time in the studio, it can't just be that I'm going in and I'm not just going in and performing whatever the action is that I already knew I was going to do. I have to have enough time to get bored and frustrated. And because otherwise, how is my brain going to solve any problems if I'm only doing what I expected to do? Like, there has to be time where I don't know what I'm doing, or else nothing new can come from it.
I love that, the not knowing. Yeah, I imagine it's frustrating, maybe even scary at times, but I think that's when the magic happens.
It's scary when you're on a deadline.
I hear you. Well, thank you so much, Pamela. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks so much, Cynthia. It's been really nice.